Buongiorno a tutti. This is Serie Awesome, and these are the three Calcio Musketeers. I'm Matteo Bonetti, joined, as always, by Nikki Bandini and Mina Rizzucchi. And we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to go over the massive midweek game, the fight for the Champions League between Napoli and Juventus. We'll look at Inter and if they've secured the Scudetto with still so much of the season left to go. We'll revisit Milan's weekend, which wasn't that inspiring, and wonder, could they potentially finish outside of the top four? And we'll give you, as always, our very wrong predictions. How is everyone doing today?
Hang on a second, because we're going to talk about this as often as we possibly can in the next few weeks. At the beginning of this season, I went on FC and I was asked to predict who was going to win the title. And I said Inter, and I got some back talk from the studio about how I always get it wrong. Well, listen, I'm pretty confident in my prediction right now. So you guys can all make your wrong predictions.
I remember that. And Nikki,
even a clock, even a broken clock gets it right or twice.
And this is my time.
Can I pat myself on the back too? Because I was all on the Romelu Lukaku hype train. And I was told back then, he doesn't have a first touch. The way that Conte is going to use him isn't going to work out. And now he's been one of the best players in Serie A. So both me and Nikki wanted to finally take a moment to pat ourselves on the back, because we got a lot of things wrong, but we got the Inter side of things pretty right. I think Mina is going to disagree on that. She was all
well. I'm usually right about everything,
train.
So I don't need to pat myself on the back.
10 consecutive Scudetti, another blowout, or Scudetto decided in early February. Not the case.
Sorry, Matteo, should we go through some things? I got it right about Romagnoli. I got it right about Spezia. I got it right about Marco Giampaolo. I got it right about, should we go through how much I get right?
Okay, so we'll let you pat yourself on the back a little bit later on the show, because you did get some things right, and we will give you the credit that you deserve. Let's start with the Juventus versus Napoli game. The crazy thing about this is it was actually a battle, sort of, for the fourth spot. Both teams went into this game tied for fourth place in the Serie A standings, which is absolutely insane. And I want to start with this. Is it fair to say that right now, Inter is the only team that is guaranteed a Champions League spot?
Yes. I think it's fair to say that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, mathematically, even they aren't, but I mean, they are, and nobody else is. Nobody else is close to them, and there's no space at all, really, between Napoli and the rest of the pack. In fact, the only reason there's any space is because they lost to Juventus.
Let's talk about the actual game. A game that obviously had so much at stake, the try to get a little bit of space past those Europa League teams, but a very different performance from Juventus based on what we saw from them against Torino, which was horrific, lackluster, lethargic, use any adjective you want that's about sleepiness. And then even the game against Benevento that Juventus lost 1-0. But this was a very different performance. So, Mina, what exactly changed for Juve against a much better opposition like Napoli that had won 6 of their last 7 in Serie A and was riding a pretty good hot streak?
It's really weird, actually, when I think about the games in which I've been most impressed with Juventus, not necessarily because I thought they produced their best performance, best game plan, but just best performance have come against the big teams. I thought they were great against Milan. You can always give, reasons why Milan obviously had lots of absences and stuff. But when you look at, the Coppa Italia, I thought Juventus had handled that really well against Inter. They were good in the against Barcelona. They were good against Napoli as well. In the Supercoppa. So I feel like there are certain moments that Juventus can live up to. And to be honest, like Nikki mentioned last week, it's only been a few losses, but it just seemed like recently the wheels just came off and the team stopped playing with any desire. It was almost like a psychological breakdown. And it just felt like, I felt like it was even more compounded by the fact that there was this party that happened with COVID and McKennie and Paolo Dybala and Arthur had gone and then been fined by the club and therefore not present for the game against Torino. And I just thought this is a really delicate moment in the season. It really seems like Pirlo's under so much pressure. Really not the time to not be professional in this. And it did sort of feel like the whole thing just fell apart. Against Torino, they weren't chasing balls. They weren't even trying. There was no desire. It's really Chiesa and Ronaldo or bust, basically. And then it came against Napoli, the desire to live up to something. And I just thought it was a game. It was a better game from a psychological aspect. I thought they were more geared up to it. I thought there wasn't the acres of space that we usually find. Everything was nice and tight, a little bit more compact. I still have a problem with the fact that I think they're a much better team when there are more midfielders there. And I love having a ball player back on the pitch, even if it's Paulo Dybala. I know that I've criticized him before, but he is essential if it's a full team of runners. It's nice to have ball players. So Arthur and Dybala will be more and more important. And having him come back with everything that he's gone through, to have that moment, to score with a trademark Dybala finish, that was a good, good moment for him. If they can maintain this desire, I think Juve can be, you know, something, you know, definitely in the top four. But I just don't know what happened for about a month and a half. They just fell off the face of the planet.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that party, Mina, because, of course, all three of those players who were involved in that party came off the bench in this Napoli game.
Yeah,
I think there's a couple of different things I want to pull out. First of all, I just want to say that watching the Torino game was... Honestly, I think it was one of the lowest points of Pirlo's tenure. I was looking at the situation. You've got all this noise, which I know we're going to talk about whether or not the club's getting ready to replace him anyway. And my personal feeling on that is it's going to be time, however the season ends now. But I was watching that Torino game and thinking, this really has to end because there's nothing here. There's nothing, there's no spirit, there's no interest, there's no sense of any sort of project. There's no coherence to this play. It's just completely lost. So the transformation to this Napoli game was striking. I really didn't expect this performance out of them. And what causes it? I mean, could it be a little bit of just big players seeing a big opponent and raising the game? I think there's some of that. Can it be a bit of, I think this is probably quite an important thing, Napoli came to play. Whereas some teams don't come to play Juventus, they come to set up shop and to park and to get in the way. And sometimes it's easier to play a good opponent who actually wants to play football with you. That's not, so we're clear, I am not going to criticize any team for coming and doing what it has to do to get a result. So it's not a criticism of Torino or Benevento either. They came and got the results they wanted. But I think that Juventus probably do find it easier at the moment to deal with a team that wants to play them. And they're not alone in that. I mean, even last night, you watched the Sassuolo game against Inter, and Inter gave up 70% possession, which is bonkers. I know we're going to talk more about this later, but I want to draw the parallel. And yet, kind of that can play into what Inter want to do sometimes. You have the ball, we're going to attack those spaces that you leave. We're going to let you walk onto the sword we're presenting. And Napoli played, I thought, quite a good game. I thought this was a really fun game of football, by the way. I enjoyed it a lot. But they did leave themselves open sometimes. And you've got perhaps the greatest strength of this team right now, because it has lots of flaws, but perhaps the greatest strength of this team right now is the individualism of a player like Chiesa, who will make the most of those spaces, will attack them, will feel empowered to attack them. We've talked about him quite a lot recently. He's become very empowered under Pirlo. He's one of the players who's taken on this challenge of, tactically, this is a bit of a mess, but I can do what I want and I can do it well. And I think it's just an environment in which the team thrives. And that's nice for Juventus on a day like this, where they get the result. I think it still gives me the same reservation as before, though, that I don't think this game really fixes anything in a grand sense. It fixes something huge, which is 3 points against a direct rival for the top four. But do I think we've suddenly got a big step closer to fixing the problems there? Not really.
Exactly. 1 point against Benevento and Torino. The thing that struck me the most against Napoli is Napoli had a pretty offensive lineup out with Fabian Ruiz, Zielinski, all those wingers that we know can cause any team problems, Dries Mertens, Lorenzo Insigne together up front, constantly interchanging. But it just felt like Juventus was more in control of the game throughout. I felt like the movement off the ball was so much quicker, more crisp, and more organized. The way that they transition from offense to defense as well, where you see they get those two lines in front of the keeper, Buffon, who started instead of Oshik Chesney. And every time that Napoli got to the final third, it was like they ran out of ideas. There really weren't that many chances. I remember one shot from Fabian from outside the box that Buffon handled pretty comfortably, but it was one of the better performances from Juventus. And I agree with you, Nikki. I don't think it changes really the overall summary, especially of the second half of the season where it's another round of 16 exit in the Champions League. It's so uninspired and you never really know. It's like playing roulette. You have no idea what you're going to get from week to week. It could be a colossal failure like it was against Benevento and Torino, where it's not the result. It's the uninspired kind of, they don't even want to be there type of vibe that the players give off, which is strange because it's not like they're playing to get their manager sacked. By all accounts, Pirlo is still someone that is liked and is respected behind the scenes. It's just a team that doesn't know what it is. From week to week, they change formation. Players are all over the place. One week you have Bernardeschi at a left back, and then you have Danilo as a center back, and then you have three central midfielders instead of two. It's just, you have no idea what you're getting from week to week, which is fine in the first 2 months of the season. But this is now the last 2 months of the season, not the first 2 months, which is what I meant to say before. So what we did see, though, let's go back to the positives, because there were a few, and this is the most recent game. The first one is Federico Chiesa, who to me now is making the case for being maybe the best player, not named Cristiano Ronaldo, and the most consistent. How surprised are both of you that it is Chiesa? Because there were question marks. Let's not forget that the player that Chiesa was at Fiorentina, someone who went to ground too easily, someone who had the worst shooting percentage in terms of attempts to actually goals to be scored, his end product wasn't always there, and now he's become basically the best version of himself at Fiorentina consistently. So is this the player that Juve should really be building around in the future?
I feel like we slightly chase our tails on this one, because we need to know what the future of Juventus is going to be. We need to know who's going to be in charge and what your idea is. But if you're asking me what I have liked this season and therefore want to see the team base more around, yeah, I think he's been the most encouraging thing that's happened this season. So I would think that whoever comes in next as manager, having spent this money on him, you should say to them, look, whatever you decide about Ronaldo, and I think he'll be there next season personally, but whatever you decide about Ronaldo, we need a vision that centers this guy and centers some of our other young talent. And then we need to have a discussion about players like Dybala, who's got 1 year left on his contract. And there was a really great statistic. I say great. It's one of those really niche facts, but that I found sort of interesting in Gazetta, where they said the last time you had Buffon, which is a bit random bit, but Buffon, Dybala and Ronaldo on the pitch together for Juventus was when they won 3-0 against Barcelona. So maybe there is something, even though Mina finds him frustrating, and you should be getting more out of this guy, which Pirlo really hasn't, and Sadi did. And that's a big, difficult question, I think, what you do with Dybala, because the one you left in his contract means you have to make a decision. Chiesa, I can't even see that it's a decision. You've paid the money and you've got him now. Make the team around what's working, and he's working.
Here's the thing. Dybala is a talented player. I've never rejected that theory or that idea. My premise with it is that sometimes he ends up being, you know, when he is playing up front, he ends up somehow being a center back trying to get the ball. His positioning is not always perfect. But in a team that is full of runners, I think that his presence, especially this season, would have been highly required. And it's really sad that this is a season he got the most injuries, because I think he could have really made a difference in a team that doesn't like to play the ball. He would have been the difference. He wasn't obviously good when he has come on previously, but he was also nursing many injuries. So that can be accepted. In a side like this, Chiesa, as much as I love him, and don't get me wrong, I do not at all feel like he warrants any criticism, but I do need him to slow down. And I think this is where I get a little bit irritated with Pirlo's sort of handling of the team, because I do think sometimes just people do what they want and there isn't this clear understanding of working as a unit. So it's like, okay, Chiesa's on a run, so let's just give him the momentum and see what happens, you know? And then he's like, oh, I'm a hero, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And there's no unity in the way that this team is moving, I think, because it's like every individual has a moment in their momentum and they take that on and they'll do something special. And then so the moments in which a team is, or a player is clever by thinking, where shall I pass, where shall I go, are highly recognized, like Arthur and his assists when he handles them, when he controls the ball, you know, the layoffs, those things become something that we talk about because they're so rare. It's almost like whichever player is going to be a hero, and that's the way that it's going at the moment. So players like McKennie, players like Chiesa will make the difference. I would like a team to be built around him, but I want a team and not individuals allowed to just, you know, indulge in whatever it is that they want to do at that specific moment. And I think right now he needs to just calm down, and he should be told to calm down in the sense that he's so clever, but I would like to see more interplay in the final third. You know, I do want to see a player of the level of Benzema or something. I want someone that links all of this together, and it's not Morata, it's not Ronaldo, and it's not Chiesa. My other issue as well that I want to mention is Buffon. I really, really like him. And I know that he's old now and he makes mistakes, but I just much, much prefer him to Szczesny. And I know saying that is so horrible because Szczesny is such a glorious shortstopper and he's been so good for Juventus. So I really don't want to take anything away. And it's very unfair if I ever criticize him. Having said all of that, Buffon is just better with his decision-making. Juventus can play a little bit higher. He knows who to give the ball to. I just feel like when we play with Szczesny, Juventus have to sit a little bit deeper. He needs players closer to him. I just feel like there isn't the same level of security at the back, which is, it's important for me that I think that if we want to progress as a team and play out this football that they want to play, then I would like a different type of goalkeeper. So I know Donnarumma might not accept the 8 million. So rather than Romagnoli, I would like to suggest him. Or just another goalkeeper, because Buffon for me is tremendous. I think he gives so much to the back line, even from a communications and a fighting thing. Szczesny has really improved on that. Again, I'm not here to take anything away from him. It's just that his style of play forces Juventus back a little bit. And I think that they can push up a little further when it's somebody like Buffon at the back, who just sometimes make pragmatic choices, you know? And I think that's important if you have a coach like Pirlo in charge. But when you look at everything that's going on, I think that there does need to be a reshuffle. But, you know, there's a lot of to build around it. But I don't think I want to make Chiesa necessarily the hero of this team yet. I would like him to grow without this, you know, major pressure on him.
One of the weird, awkward transitions that's currently happening where you're not quite sure when to fully commit to it is changing. And I guess it's the same story in the Italian national team. It's going from Bonucci, Chiellini. Chiellini's injured half the year now for a few years. Bonucci's had one of his worst seasons wearing the Juventus kit overall. And then you have two young defenders, Matthijs de Ligt, who obviously should be a starter if he's healthy, and then Mary Demiral. But clearly, to me, those are the two future pieces in front of whoever the goalkeeper is, whether it is Buffon at 50 years old or Wojciech Szczesny or Donnarumma or someone else. Do we think that it's still going to be Bonucci at the back? Like, at what point do you transition to Demiral, de Ligt, assuming that you only use two center backs? Because those two players are ready, and Mary Demiral especially is someone that I feel just needs to get consistent time because he is a bit more mistake prone than De Ligt is.
I think this, sorry to be boring, but it's the same question as before. What is your plan next season? This season, you have what's left of it. You're trying to qualify for the Champions League and you try to win the Coppa Italia, and that's as good as you can call it at this point. Next season, there needs to be a philosophical choice made about whether your top priority is get back to number one immediately, or your top priority is make this the beginning of a new project. Or maybe you say, well, there is no choice and our priority is to do both things at once, but you still have to make that choice. You have to decide for yourself what your identity of this next team is. And that will come
so
a bit
to... So who's the coach?
Exactly.
Mina, why not recall
and that's
Mauricio
kind of the question I wanted to
rights.
Just I wanted to just get onto, which is just, we haven't mentioned it in all this time, and I know Mina thinks differently about what's happening
here
to me.
Save the best for last, Nikki.
But Andrea Agnelli, the president of Juventus, has been having meetings with Max Allegri. Now, Pirlo says, I knew about these meetings. It's just two friends, and they are friends. That's genuine. Agnelli and Allegri have a friendship. To me, the timing, the fact we've just had Allegri come and do this fantastic Sky interview that we talked about on the podcast where everyone fell head over heels in love with him again. I think it's a real, real possibility that this is the way the club is going to go. I think if they do, it raises some huge questions because Agnelli was never really the one who wanted Allegri gone. Nedved and Paratici wanted the change. So if Allegri comes back in, are we going to see an even bigger change at Juventus? And I think these changes, without wanting to deflect away from what you were asking, Matteo, but these changes will define what the club decides to do next season and in the next few seasons.
So Mina, can you explain really quickly why there was this philosophical change? Who were they trying to appease to? When you've won eight consecutive Scudetti before Maurizio Sarri came, and then Maurizio Sarri lasted one season, he won the ninth in a row, and now it's Andrea Pirlo. But there was that clear shift from two managers that have a lot more in common with each other in Allegri and Conte than the current two, Sarri and Pirlo. I don't think Sarri and Pirlo are that similar, but they still have a difference, certainly, than the two before who won all those Scudetti in a row, who tended to be more pragmatic. And that's where you saw the DNA. And I go back to that Giorgio Chiellini interview from the time flies. I think it was last January 2020, where he said the reason why it's so difficult to adapt to Sarri's football is because it's changed completely the way that we read the game. We were always told to track back after you lose the ball if you can't win it back quickly. And now we're told to take risks, which as a unit, we were never that entirely comfortable with because we were never a risk-taking team. We were a team that was a little bit closer to what Inter are now under Conte, that was happy to give you possession sometimes and sit back and defend that one goal lead because they always did it so well. They did it better than anyone, especially when they had the BBC, Barzagli, Bonucci, and Chiellini. So where do you go from here, Mina? Do you go back to more of that pragmatism that got Juventus all that initial success that brought Juventus to two Champions League finals, let's not forget?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I mean, I hate that Gab Marcotti, you know, God love him, but he believes that they're on the right path and that Juventus, if they want to continue to indulge in modern football, have to keep building and trying to find ways to speed up the game. You know, I also want to remind him that Zinedine Zidane won three Champions League in a row with not a philosophy of tiki-taka football or modern football, but through pragmatism, through inserting the likes of Casemiro in the middle, having a team that is based on intelligent players and you know, working together. It doesn't always need to be a style of football that wins you things. Again, like you said, Allegri reached two finals. Diego Simeone reached two Champions League finals. You know, Bayern and all their modern football got totally trashed defensively by PSG because you know, someone should have done that earlier. I don't necessarily think a style of football is going to win over the other. I think balance is important. I don't, you know, again, think that Allegri did everything right by any state, by any, you know, quantifying label or whatever it is. He also made mistakes. But at the end of the day, if you do want to change, then you have to have a sporting director that understands how to do that. And I'm sorry, but I don't think Juventus did. They had a pragmatic team made up of great individuals that don't share necessarily the same technique or idea of football, put it all together as a collective of individuals, gave it to Sarri and thought, give us Napoli. It doesn't work that way. You have no ball players, you know, you have very few at the time. You had Pjanic, thank God for Pjanic, you know, and I'm somebody that doesn't like him, but like at least he understood how to control the possession. But everything is always a reaction to everything. Oh, Agnelli keeps reading about the team being old. So this year we got rid of Matuidi and we got rid of Khedira. So what are you doing? Are you reading stuff in the papers and adjusting it? Or do you have a clear plan on how you want to move forward with the personnel attached to it? If you want to move forward, then Rabiot is probably not going to be your choice in midfield and neither is Bentancur, because clearly the guy is not what it is that you think he is. You know, he can't receive the ball from the back and play it out and produce anything of what Pjanic did before or what Pirlo really did magnificently. So I think there has to be something looked at in management. But for me, it's not pragmatism works, but it's not because anything, it's because it makes the players the center of the whole thing. And you need to rely on the players. You need to work out how to bring the best out of them rather than putting your philosophy ahead of everything. It should be the players that are ahead of everything. And the reason why Manchester City are good is because they play with a little bit more pragmatism. It is about addressing the problems that you have within the team. Allegri can do more with his side. He had Tevez and you know, what is it, Blaise Matuidi, finally, Mario Lemina. It wasn't a side that could play this beautiful football. So calling him a coward at the time and all of this was just like, well, what are you expecting from this side? There aren't any magnificent footballers. So if you want to move forward, then buy the right personnel. Considering COVID, the fact that there's so much money lost at the moment, that is not a viable option. So go from a pragmatic choice. You don't have to necessarily go to Allegri. Look, Zidane came out after the game and said that, you know, there's a part of him that will always be really attached to Juventus. And he didn't commit to anything. And I just think that for me, he's my dream. I'm all pro Allegri. I love him so much. But I think that if you want to move forward and if you want a pragmatist who understands how to build the team and you don't want to go back to Allegri because you think it's just, I don't know, it's your ego in the way or Nedved or Paratici and, you know, their squealing is in the way, then bring Zidane. If he wants it, if offer him anything you want, direct ability to deal with the team, to buy the players. He's the one that spotted Raphael Varane. He's the one that spotted Kylian Mbappe from when he was a child. He's a great guy at spotting talent and he's great at creating teams. And frankly speaking, right now, what he did against Liverpool on a tactical level was mind-blowing. So I would love him to be there right now. And if it's not him, then buy a pragmatist or get one because Pioli, Allegri, right now, they're the best in Italy. Sorry. It's not Sacchi stupid talking about what modern football should be like.
So plenty of questions for Juventus, whether it's defense, midfield, attack, who's staying, who's going, who the manager is going to be. It really does feel like a rebuild at the moment, which is bizarre to say when you have a player like Cristiano Ronaldo. And it's a shame because it does feel like one of Cristiano Ronaldo's seasons that you had, which you knew were probably going to be three or four at most, is essentially, in a way, wasted, given what he was brought in to do. And that sucks for a player that is a once-in-a-generation, maybe once-in-a-lifetime type of talent. Just a quick mention on Napoli. Juventus's opponents went with no striker up front, a false nine look, didn't work out. One of the worst performances they've had in the last seven games. Defensively, they've been pretty poor in the last few games, but they couldn't get anything going up front.
I disagree that it was a bad performance. I thought it was an interesting game. I didn't think it was one-sided. I thought Juventus played better, but I didn't think it was a totally one-sided game. I thought Napoli...
They didn't create any chances, though, Nikki. That's what they've been doing.
You talked about the false nine. As soon as Osimhen comes on,
yeah,
the penalty. So definitely...
So Gattuso get it wrong, then?
I mean, it doesn't always work like that. It doesn't always work that because you change something mid-game, if you've done it differently before the game, we can't know. And Osimhen hasn't been contributing brilliantly for a while. So I understand not doing it, but it was definitely a vivid contrast. Once Osimhen came on, I thought Chiellini's mistake was indicative of how much more trouble he was having with this big physical striker than with Insigne and Lozano and the rest. And I think that perhaps there is something in unfamiliarity there as well, because Chiellini has played a lot of games against those Napoli guys. He hasn't played a lot against Osimhen. And so sometimes with an experienced defender like that, it does pay to be, I don't know, unexpected.
Yeah, I think that the vertical edge that he offered, he sort of made it all just a little bit more unpredictable up front. I also want to mention that I think Demme and Fabian Ruiz work the best as a partnership. I thought against Crotone, I was actually more disappointed in Napoli. Not because I didn't think, again, they played well, but because that centre-back partnership was just... That centre-back partnership just... What was just had no idea what was happening to them. And it was like, and with Bakayoko, and there was just no support from midfield. I thought it was a complete disaster on a defensive level. Again, produced a lot going forward. Zielinski, I always feel like needs to play. Demme, for me, always needs to play. And Osimhen is such a good contrast to what it is they already have. But I feel like for Napoli, like sometimes there are great performances, but there's always that bit with them that you're never quite sure again what to expect, you know?
I just think it's worth saying about Napoli, because this was an important game for them as well. We've focused a lot on Juventus, but Napoli are in a really sort of precarious position in their Champions League chase, and the win would have been huge for them. They're not out by any means because they have been on a good run up to now, but I just find it's so indicative of what is actually eating that club, much more than any tactical decision we can talk about. The fact that we haven't had a press conference in a month more, because this is what this club always seems to do. And it's not about managers anymore, because it's been throughout the De Laurentiis era. It's about leadership at a higher level than the managers. They turtle up like this, and I just don't think it's healthy. That club has been so often seems to lock itself into this siege mentality. A siege mentality can work sometimes for a manager, but when it's a whole club all the time, I just think it's not helping them at all.
I agree.
The battle for spots 2, 3, and 4 is quite heated. There's only 4 points that currently separate second place Milan from fifth place Napoli. Lazio, who are in sixth place, are on 52 points, 4 points behind fifth place, but they do have a game in hand. And then Roma round out the last team that maybe has a chance, but it doesn't look good, as Roma currently 51 points and no wins in their last three games. Inter once again picked up 3 points, this time against Sassuolo, in a game that, if you've been following Serie A the last few years, always a crazy storyline anytime the Nerazzurri play Sassuolo. And at the moment, Inter do have an 11-point lead over Milan for first place, 12 points above Juventus. Is it time to crown Inter the Scudetto champions? I know it's not mathematical, but it's realistic, let's be honest.
Yeah, I feel like I said this last week. Like, even if you win all of your games, are Inter going to drop enough points for the rest of the season for you to catch? Probably not. Even though Juventus, you know, we assume in that number that Juventus beat Inter, still a 9-point gap, and that would be 8 other games you've got for them to drop. They've won 10 in a row. I don't see it happening. I would love to tell everyone this title race is going to go down to the wire, but in my heart, I don't believe that at all, to be honest. I think it's been over probably since Juventus had those back-to-back slips against Benevento and Crotone and Benevento and Torino. Up to that point, I thought maybe, just maybe, you keep it close long enough for that last late game to be relevant, but I don't think so anymore.
Mina, what a real difference, though, from first half of the season to second half of the season. In the first half of the season, Milan finished fourth in the Champions League group. One of the most criticized sides, whether it was Antonio Conte or the style of play, it was always a negative headline. Then there was that whole chaos at the top with Suning, and did they have the money to pay wages? And it just felt like there was this dark cloud hanging over Inter. Fast forward to the beginning of 2021, Inter leapfrog Milan for the first time all season for first place. We wonder, can they keep it up? Is it going to go toe-to-toe? But now in the last 2 months, really, it's been all positive. So what changed all of a sudden? And how did Antonio Conte end up getting it so right after such a weird start to the season?
My dear, there's so much to unpack there that I don't even know. Because when you're really
start
excited,
with praising Conte.
When you're so excited to start with everything. Okay, Conte, what is he doing right? One thing is that I think that he started off the season trying to take a little bit more risks, trying to play or indulge a little bit more in the poetic side of play. And that obviously caused a lot of imbalance at the time. And they were conceding a ridiculous amount of goals, highlighted on a weekly basis by Nicky. It was their defense that proved to be a huge problem. And it just seemed like their tactic is kind of Lukaku and let's see what happens, you know. I feel like what they have now is they've put aesthetics aside and been like, right, let's indulge in what we know how to do. Let's tighten up, you know, like this is what we know. Security first. If it means we're defending with 5 men, that we'll do that because the result matters more than anything. I mean, this is Juventus basically, like old school Juve style, you know, like a little bit boring sometimes, but the result is all that's important. And I think that also when it mattered, I think Eriksen's value in the team has also changed a lot in adding a little bit more depth and creativity, so that it's not just so easy to sort of block Brozovic and then you block Inter. There's just different avenues for the goal there. And I think that's also enhanced them. So his inclusion January onwards has made the difference. Beating Juventus in the league gave them the self-confidence. So all of this, I mean, we know that when it comes to mental fortitude, probably Antonio Conte is the best. Having said all of these things, yeah. And by the way, yeah, I really hate that De Zerbi was salty about that, because it's like, if your team can be counterattacked that easily, then it's your fault. And chapeau to Antonio Conte. You should be saying chapeau. Like, how dare you think that it's inferior to play a non-possession style of football? Honestly, it's so maddening, these modern philosophy coaches. But
Mina, we're going to get into that. We're going to save your thoughts on that, because we have we definitely have a bone to pick with your boy, the Zerbi.
Having said all of that, and as much as Antonio Conte, the fact that he keeps going back to saying this team would win in the Champions League, I don't know why that's so important for him to keep saying that, you know, because you are securing results. You're securing results against, you know, Bologna, and it's not with ease. You're securing results against Sassuolo, and it's not with ease. The great game that I saw came against Milan, okay? And by all means, that was wonderful, but there hasn't been that many performances in which I can say to you, wow, what quality. So for you to keep going back on this whole Champions League, I'm still convinced you would leave at the Champions League group stage with this. So I still need to see a little bit of a progression and an evolution. And that doesn't mean you need to play tiki-taka football or hold possession by all means. It just needs to be like, I don't know, with Eriksen a bit more, like just a side that has a little bit more confidence in showing the strengths of the team rather than always masking the deficiencies within the side.
I don't think we can know whether or not this team would be different in the Champions League, but realistically, this is a different team than it was when they were in the Champions League group stage. They have won, and I get the point about some of these teams aren't the greatest and not every performance has been sparkling, but when you win 10 games in a row in Serie A, I don't care. That's not easy. That's hard. These are not walkovers.
Yeah.
And actually, I have to say, because I was right there with everyone and have been for 2 years, Conte's press conferences are often infuriating. I enjoyed him this week. Someone asked him about aesthetics and he came back and said, look, if we want to worry about aesthetics, let's go into the town centre and get a facelift. We're here to win football. I thought, you know what? That was a funny line. I laughed where he's delivered it better than I did.
He's fun.
So I have enjoyed him more lately, and that's not surprising because when you're this comfortably ahead and you can take off the stresses, you can start having fun. I'm not going to give any criticisms of Inter and how they're playing. I don't care if you only have 30% possession. When you've won 10 in a row, you've won 10 in a row. And that's kind of how it is, as far as I'm concerned.
Nicky, it feels like his PR specialist got in touch with him and said, right, everything's going good. We're going to revive and rebrand your image as like Fonte. Remember we gave him that nickname a few weeks ago? That he's suddenly like this really fun, smiley guy. And it just looks awkward when you see him smile on the touchline, because it's like you're supposed to be this infuriated, you know, all action, stressed guy all the time who turns a shade of purple when he's pissed off at his players. But it's been interesting to see. And yeah, we'll get into the Zerbi comments in a bit, but just really quickly, let's look back at January when we saw a change as well with Inter, which I think is also a key moment in the season when both Christian Eriksen and Ivan Perisic were both introduced much more in the starting lineup. Perisic, who's done really well at left wing back. And if we remember, when Conte joined, he tried out Perisic at left wing back in the ICC tournament midsummer, and then tried him at second striker and said, he doesn't fit my tactics. He shipped him off to Bayern Munich. Perisic only goes to Germany and wins a treble. And then Christian Eriksen, who's sitting there looking sad and sulking and coming on in the 91st minute, and suddenly he's like, oh, no one bought him in January. We can't offload his 7.5 million euro contract during COVID and all the financial stress that every team is going through. So maybe I have to find a way to use this guy and salvage some value. And it turns out that Eriksen's been a pretty key starter in 2021 for Inter, scored a huge goal against Milan from a free kick in the last kick of the game, basically. He's been pretty good when he started, and he's finally carved out a role for himself. So I think those two players have also been very key in really making this Inter team a bit different, a bit more dynamic. We have to talk, and we've touched upon it, I think, via Mina. Sassuolo's manager, Roberto De Zerbi, was known as this philosopher and this, you know, guy who has all this admiration for Pep Guardiola. And he studied the way that Guardiola trained his team when he was at Bayern Munich. And he's all about the aesthetics and playing possession. He looked really salty after the game about the way that Inter came out and defended. He mentioned the 10 men behind the ball and how it's so difficult and how that's not balanced football. Who decides what football is?
Exactly.
At what point do we get to everything that is an all-out possession attacking football is negative? Because I've seen this word associated with defensive football, this negative word, which comes with a pretty bad connotation for teams like Atletico Madrid and Diego Simeone, or like Jose Mourinho at times, or like Antonio Conte with Inter. Teams that can have success. Atletico Madrid had success playing a defensive counterattacking system. We're seeing Inter now destroy Serie A playing with 10 men behind the ball, conceding possession because they defend so well. So what's so wrong with defensive football? At what point did we get to the shift where it's seen as this really bad thing for a Serie A manager to do?
Well, I think there's a great parallel with the Champions League where it's the opposite, isn't it? I mean, that Bayern Munich PSG game was wild fun, but some of the defending was spectacularly bad. And look, I think that these things go around in circles. I think we tend to have phases where one thing is more in fashion and the other is not. But certainly, it's not the Italian mode right now to be defensive, but it's always been a little bit the Antonio Conte mode to be safety first and build success from that. And he's done pretty well with it in his career.
And you're right. You know, why isn't it regarded as also rather beautiful? You know, Getafe did it with Bordalas and everyone was criticizing them too. I don't understand. Like, you do what you need to do to get the results. And that's all I care about, are results in every game. I think it's important to secure that. Look, at the end of the day, Jose Mourinho's Real Madrid side were a counter-attacking side that were trying to do it in 13 seconds. He would sit there on the timeline and press his little press watch, his little watch to make sure that it was 13 seconds. And they were fabulous. At the end of the day, Ancelotti was possession-based. They came from a counter-attacking time. That balance gave them the decima, and they went on to win a lot under a pragmatist. There is no such thing as beautiful football. If you want to talk about the Netherlands, you know what? Italy's won four World Cups, and they did a lot of it with defending football and a great counter-attacking system. So I don't think there's anything like that. I think it's really irritating when philosophies are still, or styles of play are still being criticized in the public, and that's what really bothers me. You know, when De Zerbi wins Serie A and when Pep Guardiola wins with the 470 million defense that he's got at the back, and when he wins the Champions League, then we'll start talking about it. But right now, I still feel like you shouldn't make judgments. Both teams, both sides can be very beautiful to watch. Both styles of play can be beautiful to watch. It's subjective. So stop talking about it. And Saki needs to get off the microphone.
Interplay Cagliari next, a Cagliari side that is in 18th place. So it's hard to think that Inter won't pick up the 3 points this weekend and extend their lead at the top of the table. The situation at Milan, not great. Certainly not the same as their cross-city rivals Inter, who are top of the table. Milan find themselves 11 points behind first place, which is where they were for more than half the season in Serie A. On top of that, they've only won once in the last five games in all competitions, which was a narrow 3-2 win over Fiorentina just before the international break. But they're coming off another disappointing 1-1 draw against Sampdoria. That's what we saw over the weekend. And you just look at the lineup from Milan, and I think there's this realization of this team really has been overachieving, because once they have a few injuries and once they've kind of gotten over the mystique of 2020, whatever that was, it does look more like the Milan side of years past, of the mid-2010s, that would struggle against teams in the bottom half of the table. So where do we put their chances of finishing in the top four, and should we be worried?
It's funny because Antonio Conte, when he first took charge of Juventus, had said this thing, which I both agreed with and irritated me at the same time. I don't know how that works out. But he said, if this team doesn't run at 200 kilometers per hour, we're very average. And if you obviously looked at Juventus side then back then, you could understand why he said that, because it was an average team and it did really need to work harder. And I think that's kind of the thing with Milan. It's they've got really good players, but because of absences or whatever it is, you've got to have your best at their best. You know, you've got to have Theo Hernandez not making those mistakes. You've got to have Zlatan not tired from international duty. You have to have Calabria available there on the other side as a fullback, and you need Benacer to be, you know, not in the condition that he is, where sometimes he's good and sometimes he's bad. And I think that's the issue. Unless they're running at 200 kilometers per hour to sort of disguise that, then you can see certain flaws in their game, because this isn't necessarily a team that has, like, you know, Salmakers and Castillejo. They're good players, but they're not of the level that are going to win a title for you. That's what I'm trying to say. So I think that you need Çalhanoğlu to be consistent, to have Benacer and Kessié both in great levels, you know, of physical and mental sort of peak condition. And I think otherwise, then you can expose Milan for what they are. But they did come up against a very well tactically assembled Sampdoria side. I think Tomori is just such a wonderful defender. Like, if, you know, spend all your money on securing him and securing Donnarumma, because frankly speaking, they are very much the future of that side. And I just really hope Benacer comes back to being that player that you can rely on a daily basis, because right now his condition is a little bit off.
Yeah, I think talent-wise, if you go through squads player for player, I think talent-wise, Milan are not one of probably the top three squads in Serie A. I think that I would put Inter and Juventus and Napoli all a clear step ahead of them. And then after that, it's more ambiguous. But I think there is some sense of just natural gravity finding its pull at this point of the season, that they're finding their reality a little bit. And I think there's clearly a large element of fatigue and broken momentum for a team that was on top of the world, defying gravity as it was really for so long. And I think that now that magic, that little bit of inexplicable something that was keeping them ahead of everyone is gone. It's just hard to re-find it. And there's still plenty of good there. The one thing that would worry me just a tiny bit is something similar did happen with Pioli at Fiorentina, where they performed really great for a long time. But when it went, and it never came back. And I think the longer this goes on, the more that memory, fairly or not, is going to get brought up, and the more Pioli is going to be reminded of it. Now, there's an easy answer to that, which is it's not going to affect the players. They're a different set of players, a different context, different team. I don't know. I feel like football has got a memory sometimes, and it feels slightly worrying to me that you could end up going down the same path.
It happened to Lazio. Two things stood out to me as well. Sorry, but with Pioli, he does have these moments where he rides the momentum train really well, but when it falls off, it can be a little bit scary for him to get it back on track.
Yeah, two things stood out to me in the game against Sampdoria. One, for every lung-bursting run by Theo Hernandez, you have an equally catastrophic defensive error, whether it's a pass or poor marking or just a collapse defensively. And that's a bit of a deficiency in his game because he isn't a complete left-back. He's so good going forward, but defensively, and Stefano Pioli said he had made big improvements. I haven't really seen them in 2021. I think back to the game against Federico Chiesa and Juventus when he was torched, or so many other situations when he's trying to defend or playing a pass and it just doesn't go his way. So that's something that Milan are really going to have to work on, because right now there's such a discrepancy in Teo attacking and Teo defending. The other one is players like Rade Krunic and Samu Castillejo. I'm not really sure what they offer. Who is Rade Krunic? What exactly does he do? I'm still not sure. And I've seen every minute that he's played for Milan, and especially when he's playing out on the wing. And Samu Castillejo, like, he's not part of the future. He's had enough time to try to prove himself. He's not the player that we saw in La Liga. And then you have Jens Pettahauge, who is a young player who has shown to be dynamic, who can, you know, turn his man inside out and score. And that's exactly what he does. He comes in and he scores a beautiful goal, a typical Hauge goal, where he cuts inside, a little chop on his right foot, beautiful curling finish. So there are some players that I would love to see much more of playing for Milan, because right now there are certain players that you look at and you say, right, that's not part of the future of this Rossoneri squad. And I wanted to get to a transfer rumor, Mina, because I know you're probably going to have a lot to say.
Before you're going to ask me this, because this is going to be such a great debate, but just before that, do you regret the sale of Andre Silva?
100%. I mean, hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, because
Ante Rebic was the player that it looked like Milan got a great deal with the way Ante Rebic played last season, but someone who's never really been consistent throughout his career. And now Andre Silva is one of the top scorers in the Bundesliga, scoring a goal a game, looking fabulous, by the way. Like, the quality of the goals,
the tactical,
he's a younger player as well. But Mina, let's finally do it. I think I might surprise you, because in this apparent swap, that's a rumor that's been circulating in the Italian media, Alessio Romagnoli, the defender, swap, which isn't something you see that often, a direct trade in Serie A, for Federico Bernardeschi, both players that are at their all-time low in terms of their stock, who are coming off poor seasons. I actually think this is going to benefit Milan more. Let me give you my reasons why I'm more onto Federico Bernardeschi.
You hated him!
I hated him at Juventus for the reason that every week he's playing in a different position. He's a left back now. When he's on the Italian national team.
Exactly, but you still blamed him.
Of course I did, because he wasn't clearly the right player for Juventus. The way that he's used, it's not working. He needs a fresh start more than anyone in Serie A. I've said this on the podcast before. On the Italian national team, when he's played as a winger in his right position, he suddenly looks like the Federico Bernardeschi that I remember at Fiorentina, a player that I like quite a bit, that I remember even played at right wing back for Paulo Sousa and did quite well. And right wing is also the position most in need for Milan, where currently it's this rotation between Alexis Salamakers, who's okay, a player that runs a lot, but I don't think his ceiling's that high, and Castillejo, who I don't think there's any future for him at Milan. So you bring in Bernardeschi, I think it's a low-risk, high-reward situation where if you can tap into the player that Juventus spent more than 45, 40 million on, suddenly you've got the bargain. On the Juventus end, Mina, Alessio Romagnoli, would he play with the Bianconeri?
Well, I don't know, because I'll stop supporting Juventus, so it doesn't really matter to me.
Wow.
That's so funny. No, it's really mean to say that. Listen, Romagnoli, I think, is really important for Milan. He's captain. He grew up with that team. He's Italian. He's, you know, beloved. I would really hate to not see him in the Rossoneri jersey. Having said all of these things, even in one of the first podcasts that we did with Gab Marcotti, I said that I wasn't a fan of his. He nearly wanted to hurl me down the, you know, down to the other across the room because he hated that I said that. I have not been a fan of Romagnoli like ever. Romero is a person that I would bring from Atalanta if I could choose a centre back to take on. I like a guy who's good on one-on-one duels. Romagnoli for me doesn't ever do it in big pressure situations. And frankly speaking, I've always felt sorry with Bernardeschi and stopped myself from criticizing him too much because I do think he's been badly treated at Juventus. But you're right about the fact that he needs an opportunity to grow somewhere else, and maybe Milan is the right place to give him that. But I certainly don't want Juventus to once again lose a better player to take something ridiculous in return, like when we lost João Cancelo and Arthur, who's always injured, not because I think Pjanic is stunning, but that also didn't work out in the way that I had hoped it would. And so I just feel like this is another swap deal where I'm getting a Mino Raiola player and constant wages that are going up and up every single season, which really would, you know, Bernardeschi is also a Mino Raiola, no? My future husband. But it doesn't really, you know, these things slightly worry me. But again, there's too many outside players. We already have a lot of centre backs. It's not something that's important for Juventus. But can I just say one other thing as well? Is that with so much criticism of Real Madrid giving up Ashraf Hakimi and Theo Hernandez. And I used to always say, Ferran Melli and Dani Carvajal are amazing. And Hakimi's not going to accept sitting on the bench, and neither should Theo Hernandez, because they're good enough. But they're just not of the level of Carvajal and Mendy. So again, Zidane always gets it right. Always, always gets it right.
Given how shockingly inaccurate our predictions collectively have been on this podcast, we thought it was only fair to give you more predictions. So we're going to try to decipher this crazy Serie A season, this incredible race for spots 2, 3, and 4 in the Champions League table, and also see whether or not the balance of power has truly shifted going into next season. So let's start with the first question, and that is ranking the top four spots 2, 3, and 4, especially are the ones that are up for grabs. It's a crazy revolving door at the moment. So Mina, kick us off. Who is your order of 1 to 4 in Serie A at the end of the season?
I think it's going to be, you see, my top four is still my top four from the start of the season. I just, obviously, the way that it went is I didn't think Inter would obviously be at the top, but they are. And so I actually would put Milan in second. I think they might have a greater chance over Juventus just because Juve's run-up is quite difficult. And then Juve, I still think they will make top four, and my money's still on Atalanta. It's between them again, and I thought maybe Roma now down in seventh, but I can't see Lazio, Napoli for me. I didn't put them in top four in the start of the season. And there's nothing that makes me think I put them in my top four right now. I mean, they have a lot of talent, but they just never live up to the potential. So I've stopped believing in them that much.
Well, that's my top four. The person who did predict that Inter were going to win the league this season.
The broken
just remind
clock.
Everyone of that. I will keep them in first spot, obviously, because that's not a hard prediction to make anymore. I think Juventus will end up second. I think they've got just the best squad out of the teams that are hunting for it. And I think that they've got players there like Ronaldo who, when push comes to shove, are going to dig these results out. I think I'm going to put Atalanta in third. I think they've just got a little bit more of the right momentum going at the moment. Luis Muriel is scoring goals.
Oh, wow.
Just ridiculous rate at the moment. And Milan will hang on in fourth. I think they've got a real critical loss of momentum at the moment. And it's a shame because they've been brilliant in the season overall, and fourth place in the end would still be a good result. But I think they're going to cling on ahead of Napoli in fourth.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but this ranking I think will hurt a lot of fans. Inter in first, Juventus in second, Atalanta in third, and I'm going to go with Napoli in fourth. I actually think at this point Milan are going to find a way to lose out on the top four. I've seen this all too many times. I hate the way that this is going in 2021, given how brilliant they were for a full season. It was a full season. It's just that you can't combine the second half of one season and the first half of the other. Because if they did, Milan would have won the Scudetto. If you took that 2019-2020 season, what they did in the second half post-lockdown was amazing. And what they did in the first half of this season was truly inspiring and spectacular. And we were loving it. And it was a fairy tale story. But the wheels have started to come off. And I am genuinely worried that this will be a colossal collapse and that we're going to see Milan, Roma and Lazio in those Europa League places. I know it sounds crazy. I don't want it to happen, but I think we're going to get that as the big shock of the Serie A season. Now let's talk about the balance of power in Serie A.
I just want to see something. Well, because Milan have four more games at home, so that's four more losses potentially. Because they
just four losses at San Siro. That's just how it is.
Because they don't seem to win in San Siro. I don't know what's going on there. It hasn't been since the 7th of February, and they've won only three matches in San Siro at the start of the year. So let's say they win one of them and one loss. So let's just say four losses. Is that going to make top four? Because you don't think Napoli will lose as well? Because I don't know, something will happen and they'll lose something. I don't know. You really
Napoli
don't
won
think.
6 out of 7 before this Juventus game, by the way.
Yeah, but they're also a team that, I mean, Crotone scored 3 against them. That's got to mean something.
Hey,
right?
Crotone is scoring 3 against line. Everyone since Sergio Cosmi came back.
That is entirely true. That is entirely true. And Malinowski is really amazing. So I definitely put Atalanta there. Okay, fine. I concede. If it is your top four, it is your top four.
It's my top four. There's no debating it. We all had different top fours, and we all usually get our predictions wrong. So, Milanisti, don't worry too much. Same with the two Roma sides. Don't worry that much.
Yeah,
that
we're all harsh on Napoli. Napoli fans hate us now.
The balance of power, 9 years straight, it's been Juventus. They've been dominating Serie A. They've often ran away with the Scudetto 3/4 of the way through the season. And even sometimes halfway through the seasons as the winter champions, you could see there's no one that's going to realistically make up these points already that they had built up. But things have really changed. We've already touched upon it in the podcast, the woes of Juventus, the rebuild, the question marks surrounding the club. So is this now the era of Inter and Antonio Conte that we're seeing that is going to go on into next season and potentially even longer?
The problem with that question is so much depends on sinning. So much depends on an ownership group who are seemingly in a position where they're no longer able to invest in the club, and where, in fact, to the contrary, they need some bridging investment. They need some outside investment to maintain what they're doing at the club. If Inter don't spend at all, then of course it's easier for other clubs around them to catch up, even though in the short term, not spending in January might have helped, because Antonio Conte maybe does his best work when he's not allowed to tinker in the transfer market. Of course, long term, if your investment in the club stops, if you are not paying wages when they need to be paid, if these things become recurrent problems, it's going to be damaging. It may also damage your relationship with your manager, who might not want to hang around if that's the setup. So much depends on sunning fundamentally. But I would be very surprised if next season we don't have both Inter and Juventus in the title race. I think Juventus will be better next season regardless. This was a real down season. I think Inter aren't going anywhere as long as they don't have really big problems financially. But I think Juventus will be right back in the hunt next season. And maybe someone else too.
It's interesting. I think the one thing that you can take as and being a fan of a club that Conte was in charge of, I always feel like he comes at a time when the club can't spend money and something happens. And then he is like, you know, forced to deal with low money and low budgets. And then as soon as he leaves, something happens to the team and all of a sudden there's lots of money to spend there. So it's like, you know, he left Juventus, then, you know, eventually they buy Ronaldo. He left Chelsea and now they have like a £500 million squad, you know. And like, maybe this will happen at Inter too. I think it's also about what he wants. And I feel like Conte is the kind of guy who wants everything that he wants and not to be told no and have total control. And I think he loves that. And if he's not offered that at Inter and he gets a lot of criticism because, I don't know, something happens next season, then I he's not somebody I would rely on to stay for the long term, is my point. He's not Allegri, who's just happy in his position and is fine with staying there for the next 5-6 years. Conte gets an itch and needs to move on. So that's the only thing that worries me about
it. It was touch and go that he stayed this year.
Exactly. So there's nothing. And he could start your preseason, like hit at Juventus and still walk out. So you never know what's going to happen with Conte. And that's the only issue that I would say. In terms of, I think what they have done differently is their mentality strong. They are a force to be reckoned with. They have much better players than I think they had before, you know, your Icardis and all of that. Like, there now we have like genuine contenders, you know, players that are very good. Having said that, I agree Juventus will be better next season. It remains to be seen who's their coach, but even if it is Pirlo and even if they decide to stick with this entire setup, at least he'll have a preseason. It won't be COVID hopefully next year, so there'll be a little bit more time to sort of get his ideas across and to work as a unit. But, and I do think Milan will keep getting better every year. I think there's going to be a lot more investment. I think that the ideas will get better and stronger. You've seen how much the team has grown in just this amount of time. It could grow a lot more. And I think it's always going to be back to those three guys at the top. And hey, Roma think they should be winning the Champions League at this point. So let's see what they do as well.
Can you imagine after 11, 12 years, whatever it's been, that Juventus, that Inter hasn't won the Scudetto? The last time was under Jose Mourinho, the treble-winning season. They assemble the best squad by far that they've had since then, and then it's ownership problems where suddenly things get dismantled. I really hope that nothing happens to this squad because it is clearly a team that now has a great identity under Antonio Conte that has found the right formula for success. And I think that they could be a real problem in the Champions League next season because what we've seen from them first half of the season compared to now is two completely different sides. And this one, I think, could actually do quite a bit of damage in Europe. And if you're a betting person at home listening to this, just do the complete opposite of what we said for the top four, and you should make a little bit of money. Any final thoughts? Any Cersei Cosmiisms that someone's come up with?
I just
score three goals against Napoli.
It's been a week since we did this podcast, so it hadn't taken in that 3-4 defeat against Napoli. Look, we all poked fun at Cersei Cosmi, and I was right in the front of the line and here for doing that, but I don't know what exactly magic he's uncorked, but Simi, who is this
Simi
gangly, yeah, awkward-looking striker who did score 20 goals in Serie B last season, he scored 8 goals in a month in 5 games. Nobody in all of Europe's top 5 leagues outscored him over that period. It's more goals than he'd scored in this entire season before Cosmi arrived. He's uncorked something. They're still going to go down. They're going to be last, but they're doing it in a way that is wildly fun to watch. So hands up.
Simi's tied for fourth right now in the Capocannoniere standings behind Lukaku, Ronaldo, and Luis Muriel. He's level on goals with Ibrahimovic, Insigne, Lautaro, and that's it on 15 goals. Also has 6 penalties, but whatever, we won't count them. Still has 15 goals. He's been brilliant. All right, Mina, I've seen you really excited over there, wanting to get your final thoughts in. So what is it? Better be good.
Oh, the pressure is on. Firstly, I feel like Spezia should have gotten a point against Lazio. Secondly, this was Beppe Iacchini, his first game back as Fiorentina coach, and let's just say that confusion reigns supreme and Ribéry was sent off. And I just want to say that we talked a lot about Simeone. He is wonderful. But can we also mention Messias? Because wow, what a player there is. And David Nicola, I really feel like this coach is just fantastic. And I'm really excited for what he can do with Torino going forward.
From Inter to Cersei Cosmi, we really cover it all here on Serie Awesome. We'll be back next week. If you have anything that's not nice to say, just keep it to yourselves. For Mina, for Nikki, myself, Matteo, we'll see you next week. Ciao for now.